Scribe with Crypto Queen, and today we have a guest, Rogue Nut 420, and also lots of everybody coming in to stop in and say hi. We are streaming today on Vim through Rogue Nut 420. We're also on the Hive Discord server, and you can follow me on Hive at Little Scribe. Also, if you want to go back and listen to any of my shows, Crypto Queen, just go look on your favorite podcast service and you can find Crypto Queen. And today we're going to be talking about mainstreaming the blockchain. So Rogue and I have come up with some fun little samples in the real life, like IRL, that look like they're approaching something that might be kind of cool. And so we'll get into that in a little bit, but just want to say hi to everybody. A Great Buzz, Eric Wilson, Ganja Farmer, Gold Street. Hi, everyone, for hanging out with us today. And Rogue Nut, of course.
Yep.
Also, mics are open, so if you guys have anything you want to add, feel free, because we're a small enough group I think we can manage. Okay. So I'm going to do a video and a screen share. You're welcome to check those out while I talk about our first and foremost, which is IBM. Let me go pull that up. Hang on. Okay. Yeah, I'm so cool right now because I don't even know where it went, but I'll find it. There we go.
One of the first into computers, correct?
Yes, they are. Yeah, I'm having kind of weird things with my share screen. I'll just hop over to it and I'll drop the link. Let me grab it. Okay, that was like a really weird long link, but let me just read it. Okay, so here's what I find super interesting is what's really weird is that like every bank, okay, first of all, let me just back up and say, I started out in the crypto industry just as a like meager little blogger back in 2016, hopping on Steam and being like, oh, you can make money blogging, that's so cool. Like, I didn't know the first thing about crypto. I'd heard of Bitcoin, got into it, super intrigued. And then I'm in the legal industry, so I've worked as a paralegal for the last 9 years, and one of the jobs that I have had is, and one of the things I do is I work contracts. So when I'm working for an attorney that represents someone in a contract dispute, one of the things that I've seen often, and this actually kind of blew my mind. I thought it was just like conspiratorial, but it's totally true. And that is that the banks really don't like cryptocurrency. I know, newsflash, everyone. I'm sure this is the first time that you've heard this information. But the banking situation, at least in the States, is not friendly to cryptocurrency. And we actually had a client who was a Bitcoin hedge manager. So, I mean, he was trading millions of dollars per month in Bitcoin. And what would happen is this. He would transfer, say, let's say $500,000 worth of Bitcoin to a buyer who would then transfer US dollars to our client's bank account, like a US bank account. I mean, a lot of Bitcoin traders refuse to use US bank accounts. He was using US bank accounts for one crazy reason or another. And so his buyer would transfer like, you know, $500,000 to his bank account. And then guess what would happen? You guys know? You have any ideas what would happen? Anyone want to take a guess?
What?
So, okay. So one of the things that happens is this. It's like a swindle. The buyer then contacts the bank and says, I was scammed. This transaction is fraudulent. They go to the bank. They say, this Bitcoin transfer was fraudulent. They don't even have to say why. They just say it was a Bitcoin transfer. It was not actual goods. I gave him $500,000. I want my money back. And the bank will say, oh my gosh. And they freeze the seller's account. They freeze the assets. They send back the money to the buyer. And now the buyer gets off scot-free because he just got $500,000 worth of Bitcoin and he got his money back. And the bank was the one that made that possible because banks are trying to punish Bitcoin hedge fund managers. And so they're saying, oh yeah, we don't want to encourage this. They think that they're going to take it upon themselves to discourage cryptocurrency trading, especially in their, under their roof. So they're freezing these people's accounts, and it sometimes takes a year just to unfreeze them. And it's unconstitutional. I mean, it's not their right to say that this person, well, okay, let me take that back. Banks are pretty good about when you say something fraudulent occurred that they'll honor that. But they're not supposed to be sending the money back. They have to investigate it first. What they're doing is they're not even investigating it. They're just taking the person's word for it because it's Bitcoin. And they love to do it because they like think that it's discouraging and or at least punitive or punishing the person who, yes, they should be put on inquiry. These people are federally registered banks, basically playing God and saying, oh, we don't like what you just did. That was fraudulent. It's not fraudulent. They can prove these transactions. And so as a paralegal and as a legal professional, I'm sitting here going, yeah, 10 ways to Sunday. That was completely outrageous behavior of the bank. And then we can prove it in court. The difficulty is that the bank is really difficult to sue because they've got all these lawyers and they're huge bank industries. I mean, it's just a crazy thing. So what's going on is that all of these hedge funds and traders are losing money, losing assets. Their accounts are being frozen for years. So they just aren't even banking in the US, and or they're just really finding it frustrating to bank at all when they're trading in Bitcoin. So what we're looking at right now is the segue into newer blockchain industries that are blockchain and maybe even cryptocurrency friendly. So that's why I wanted to switch over to the IBM blockchain. So I wanted to read that. I don't know if you guys had any comments on that, but I'm going to switch over to that.
What I was going to say is, well, I can see why the banks feel threatened that crypto is being used, because obviously it's a threat on the fiat system. You know?
Exactly.
I can see why they're so defensive with that and doesn't want anything to do with that.
Yes, they're extremely threatened because when we take power away from their actual system of governance, which is the fiat currency, then we're taking power away from how their actual power is regulated. Because if we switch over to a new currency that is not dependent on a middle person such as a bank, the more people that gain influence and control and power in a currency that is not regulated by a government or a bank, the less these banks will have anywhere to fit in. Because a bank is a middleman, is it not? Is it or is it not? Is a bank not just a middleman?
I don't see why they can't just integrate with the system. Like, the banks are not technically, you know, totally worthless. Like, they can still be of use in the crypto community.
I totally agree. Because the thing about the banks is that what they present to us today is at the very least, a false sense of security. But the banks are great. You know, I remember taking out my first checking account when I was 18 and just being like, oh, I'm so responsible. I have money in my bank account. We just kind of have this feeling that the money is going to be safe where it's at. No one's going to take it from us. And furthermore, maybe you've got like a mutual fund or some like 2% monthly growth. I don't know. But the bank holds your money. They use it to do transactions that gain them interest and allow them to, like, you know, hugely transact in the world. But for us as a little 18-year-old college student, yeah, banks are great. Here's where it gets interesting, though, is what you were saying, is that is it that safe? Because, okay, yeah, I mean, if they're FDIC regulated, then they're going to be, it's going to be safer because they're going to be insured. They're going to be insured. Whatever money you lose, what if it if it's the bank's fault or if a tornado came through and like took out all their servers and all the monies of all the world that they ever had any access to all suddenly disappeared, their insurance and their, it'll be federally insured. So that's one thing that banks can say that, say, Bitcoin can't, right? And so we're really happy about that. But what we're looking at is banks anymore are saying, wait a minute, this blockchain business is actually not bad. And I'm not talking cryptocurrency. I'm just saying blockchain transactions. So let's see what IBM says, okay? They say, let's make trust the financial world's universal currency. Here's what's hilarious is they're like, the currency of trust, right? The reason a bank is in place is because we do not have trust. Bank is essentially there, something of an escrow. They are there to say, yep, we're going to hold on to your cash and we're going to tell this business that it belongs to them if you tell them it does. We're essentially an escrow service in reality. What they're saying is, IBM says, let's make trust the currency. So if we could revolutionize a financial world where paperwork is replaced by innovation and speed, fraud and crime could one day be put to rest by collective trust and a highly secure shared view of the truth. It's just all so lovely. But it says this, IBM blockchain working together to remove long-standing friction, create new solutions, and deliver tangible business outcomes. Now it's your turn to join them. Okay, so I want to look down at the banking option because they have this like total thumbnail. Did you guys look at the link? Let me see if I can try and get it back up. Hang on. So weird how that's not going. Let me see here. There we go. Now you guys can see my screen. Let's go look at that. I'm assuming you can see this if you hop on the live. Okay. Okay, this is so cool. So it says, here's what's cool. 91% of banks will invest in blockchain solutions by 2018. I don't know. It doesn't say 91% of banks will use blockchain solutions. It just says invest in. And that may or may not be true. I have no idea.
Well, have you heard of the JP Morgan and... forgot the other one. They both...
Chase?
They just got a contract with Coinbase to pretty much do all their financial stuff.
No, they did not. Why did I not know about this?
I just read that the other day. I forgot where I read that. I can look that up real quick.
OMG! JP Morgan Chase just got under contract with Coinbase?
Well, yep. And he... because back in 2018, he even said that he hated Bitcoin and it was a joke. And I forgot exactly the words he used, but he was calling it that if any of his brokers invested in it, he would fire him on the spot. And then here's him now investing in crypto, in Coinbase, and taking on their account.
I mean, that's actually a little bit hilarious because it's not just like, oh, yeah, we'll invest in blockchain technology. It's like, oh, let's list on Coinbase. Like, that's like a big leap from you're fired if you even so much as sneeze in the general direction of a Bitcoin, right?
Oh, it's on Coindesk.
Coin what?
Coindesk. I can put the link in.
Yeah, stick the link in. Let me read some here. Okay, so trade finance. This is what I love. IBM just does this for me. Here's what they say. Challenges. Banks struggle with manual processes and stringent requirements for managing, tracking, and securing domestic and international trade transactions. For example, processes for corporate trade financing letters of credit are typically paper-based and fragmented. What I understand fragmented to mean is that it's basically testimonial. It's like one person can testify to something. It's like you're just kind of taking their word for it, basically. Like a fragmented will would be you're sitting at their bedside and you're like, okay, grandpa, I'm writing this down as you talk. So this can make financing even more challenging for the 50% of smaller enterprises that may have no credit sources. And then IBM says that blockchain-based smart contracts can automatically store, secure, and exchange contract details and financial terms, coordinate trade logistics and payments on an integrated real-time network. And we refer to that as the ledger. Of course, here, look, it says with ledger transactions can flow from one small enterprise to another through a trusted bank. Larger firms can also benefit by better tracking of trade finance transactions. I mean, this is basically like what we talk about every single day of our entire lives here in the Hive, right? Like, this is nothing new to us. And honestly, maybe when people read this, they're like, that sounds really cool. I don't really know what it means. But what I think they should be saying is how much more secure this really is, because it's a blockchain and they're not really talking about the technology as much as just what it does. And maybe that's the smarter thing to do. I don't know. Let's see. Hey, Iron Shield, thanks for joining. Drange Visions, thanks for joining. Here's some more information that I got from IBM. So digital identities. Here's another one that was interesting. Challenges: requiring clients to repeatedly provide identifying information can erode customer satisfaction and cause transaction delays. Here's what was interesting. Okay, so do you guys remember my cute little anecdote about the client who was trading in millions of Bitcoin a month? And then he goes to the bank, and I swear, he's been at these banks for years. They know who he is. And now they have to check his identity? And they have to check and make sure he did something not fraudulent? If they actually transacted on the blockchain, and I'm not talking about the Bitcoin blockchain, just their own inner blockchain that they worked on, they developed as their own bank, and then it was on a chain ledger that could be, I mean, it's supposedly immutable, then we have someone who comes in and says, no, that was not a fraudulent transaction. You can see that I did this. Because here's the thing, on a blockchain ledger, you don't have to go prove anything. You just say, go look at my freaking ledger, jerk. Like, I did the transaction. It went through. What are you going to say? That it didn't? That I did? Because the thing is, the banks aren't going to go be like, oh, can I go see your Bitcoin wallet and make sure that you transferred $500,000 worth of Bitcoin? No, they're not going to do that. But on a blockchain ledger, they would be able to see that. They would be able to look. Maybe. I don't know. Actually, because it would be their own blockchain ledger, so maybe not. But still, they know who they're dealing with, and it's just a stricter compliance, and it supports KYC due diligence, helps secure personal information, and enhances client satisfaction. That's just one step in the right direction. So good job, IBM. We're happy with you. Let's see. Any other thoughts, Rognut?
Not right now on that.
Okay, because I was going to shift over to Facebook. This one's fun. If you look at my screen share, this is from The Verge, which is probably my favorite tech news library distributor. So it's got Facebook is shifting its Libra cryptocurrency plans after intense regulatory pressure. I can only imagine what intense regulatory pressure that might have meant. So we're looking at Facebook as, so Mark Zuckerberg is like, hey guys, let's invent a cryptocurrency. They're not idiots. Like, they know. You guys, look at this. If you look at this page, it says in Zuck we trust, and then right below it, these little squiggly lines, they kind of look like the old Steam logo, don't they? That's kind of weird.
Libra. It's exactly like it.
I don't know. I'm just saying. Ever since Dan Larimer made the use case for blogging on a blockchain to get paid in cryptocurrency, you're basically mining crypto. I'm not gonna deny the possibility that Zucky was looking over here and going, hey, that's interesting. That might be something we can do. So he comes up with the Libra project. And it supports what he was going to do. Here, I'm going to read this. originally, I think they actually launched in June, or they started the project last June, so June 2019. And this article from The Verge says, Facebook is altering its plans for its Libra cryptocurrency project following months of severe regulatory pressure and political pushback. And this is because, what did they do? Let me find the names here. Who are the people? PayPal, WhatsApp. Hold on. Okay, it says the currency was supposed to be supported by a pool of assets, including existing currencies from around the world, contributed by various participating members, including big names like MasterCard, PayPal, Stripe, and Visa. The biggest names in the industry. I mean, MasterCard and Visa, the biggest names in credit card industry. PayPal, the biggest name in online transacting. Stripe, the second biggest name in online in business transacting. I'd say PayPal is less, is more like small business, and then Stripe would be like large business online transacting, but like the biggest names in online transacting in the world. And they were supporting Facebook in building this cryptocurrency and creating something of a blockchain ledger where they could all sort of be part of it. And it kind of sounded like a little bit of a merger. Am I not? Am I like making that up in my head?
No, it sounds like it, honestly, yeah.
So they get together and they're like, yeah, let's totally copy Steam it because Little Scribe's amazing. They're like, we could just use so many of her. So they go and they make Libra, and then they get under fire, most likely by the SEC. And all whatever known and unknown regulatory agencies you can think of. And they come under not just fire, but under siege. And so now suddenly the largest, what do they call them? Monoliths in the world are bullied into submission. So I'm sorry, but that freaks me out. When someone like, not just Facebook, but a conglomerate of the largest financial online institutions in the entire world combined and separate get bullied into submission? That's a little scary to me. I don't know about you. Like, how do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, no, it sounds honestly like they're scared of it, and that's why they're bullying them. Like, that's what a bully does to someone else, is because they feel that they're a threat to them. So obviously that's why only bullies, technically, that's...
It's true. It is so true. And it says, Facebook remains fully committed to the project, said a spokesperson in a statement given to The Verge. Man, wouldn't that be cool to be like working for The Verge and have Facebook actually give you an actual statement? That'd be so cool. Right. So,
well, I don't really call The Verge a really great source.
I consider them a source of ongoing, up-to-date information. I don't know if they're necessarily always 100% accurate, but they have ongoing up-to-date information. And if Facebook, if Facebook is going to give them a statement, then that's not insignificant. I'm just saying. Hey, The Hive. How's it going?
I just noticed The Verge is very liberal-based on some things I've noticed.
Okay, I will take that into consideration. I just consider them a fun place to go find news. It just says, despite those measures, the Libra project was met with swift and vocal backlash from across the political spectrum. Let me click on that because I don't even know what that means. Regulators were concerned about Facebook's potential size influence on the project due to the company having conceived of the idea and having a financial interest in its success. Of course, I don't know what the problem is, guys. You know what that means? Regulators were concerned that Facebook was going to take over the currency modulatum of the world. Like, they were going to make their own currency. I don't know. That's kind of what I think that means. Let me see what this looks.
I agree.
Okay, let's read what they say. House lawmakers officially ask Facebook to put Libra cryptocurrency project on hold. So it's the House. How would you like to be so influential in an economy, in a world ecology and economy, that the House comes to you and knocks on your door and says, I was just wondering if you could please halt the development of your proposed cryptocurrency project. Would you mind? I'm just saying.
What's your view on, let's say, what you think Democrats are more against crypto than Republicans, or you think both sides are kind of equally against it?
Oh, that's such a good question. Such a good question. I would say Republicans are more for it and Democrats are more against it. Am I wrong?
I haven't really looked into it, but that's what it looks like. All right, House is all Dems. I mean,
that's a good point. Like, what if the House was all a bunch of Repubs? And then they're like, oh yeah, hell yeah, this is great. This is great for capitalism. It's great for the freedom market trade.
It is, you know, but what if we backed fiat by gold again or by something else of value? Would that do away with crypto?
Ooh, what if we backed crypto by something else of value? Like, what if our crypto all had a gold standard? What if we went back to the 70s and we're like, hey, Nixon, remember that one time? And then we're like, let's just back. Okay. Actually, that's a really good question, because look at this. Overstock is actually doing that very, very thing. Overstock.com. Let me actually, sweet. I actually have this queued up. Let me grab it.
You're all reading the memo stock out there. I'm not reading any of the internal memos that go around.
You're not reading any of the internal memos that go around, Hive?
Yeah,
okay, well, I'll just be reading what I'm reading. So you can hear, you don't have to look at it. I'll literally be reading it out loud. You're welcome to look at my screen share. You don't need to, if you want to know what's going on. Hang on a second. Oh.
I'm more saying that everything that you're reading now is all just surface products or surface propaganda. There's other things going on beneath the surface.
Ooh, Hive. The Hive says it like a man. He says all the stuff we're reading right now is just surface propaganda. There's always something going underneath the surface. Okay. I will second that notion insofar as we're dealing with like some of the largest powerhouses in the entire universe, aka combined force, including Facebook, Visa, MasterCard, Stripe, and PayPal, the some of the largest, if not the largest, online financial institutions in the entire universe. So when the House comes and says, can you please put a stop to that? What is your take, The Hive? What's your take? Do you have one?
I would say that the only way those people can eventually compete with the crypto market, as in them financial conglomerates we're talking about, is if they come together. They have to unite and have a united front. So they have to come together. Facebook is a universal platform that is used in every nation across the world. So if they can combine a cryptocurrency with Facebook, well, yeah, they have a chance. The regulatory objections that are coming in are companies you could probably buy from the Democrats, as Democrats get a lot of them financial backhanders.
I think that was really well put. So yours, just because your mic was a little quiet, I'm going to reiterate that. Is that the only way for something like this to take place where, and we're not even talking about replacing fiat currency. All we're doing is talking about all of these people wanting to come together and come up with a currency that their users can use. But yeah, it's the writing's on the wall. Like, we know what these guys want to do. And the only way for something like this to succeed and push through would be for all of these ones to come together. And I've always said this as well. I'm not the only one. You're obviously saying it as well. The only way for something like this to actually make any sort of headway would be, number one, baby steps. And then number two, it would need to be the monoliths of the world. And my concern is that, yay, we're excited about cryptocurrency. Yay, we're excited about blockchain. We like that it's a immutable ledger per se, so to speak. But I actually have this story in my head that goes something like this. these huge conglomerates that get together and decide the future currency of the world, which we all kind of think is cool at this point, but like they come together, they decide this future currency of the world, and then what? They get to decide how this looks. And when we have millions upon millions of users on billions of users combined with Visa, PayPal, MasterCard, Facebook, next it's going to be eBay, Amazon, Google, like all of these guys are going to come together. Combined total, they will literally have like 99.9% of the entire human population on a shared server. How is that not unlike basically having everybody upload their entire biological biosphere of their selves like onto one blockchain? How is that not that? Tell me how that's not actually more freaky than what we have right now.
I totally agree with everything you're saying.
If I can just last opinion here, when they do eventually come to the aspect of having that cryptocurrency out there, Bitcoin and every other coin will be worthless.
Bitcoin and what? Sorry for the echo. I can't seem to come off of my mic. Hang on. So
that's a perfect point. I like what he said. Yeah, that's exactly what I've been thinking too. And I've been going on rants actually in the Pulse, kind of like saying that, you know, these coins, like, when are we just going to stop forking to a fork to a fork? Like, why can't we fix what we already have?
So,
and I was thinking that's going to get, it's going to be devalued eventually. That's what I was saying. And how I put it to a perfect perspective, like I was trying to say, is yeah, some other coin is going to take over everything.
And this is something I wrote about 2.5 years ago when I first joined the platform.
Okay, so what you're saying, guys, is that if these conglomerates come together and come up with this cryptocurrency or any currency for that matter, it's essentially going to be strong enough to wipe out any other system that's currently in place, either nationally or internationally.
Yeah, pretty much.
Legislation will take care of the rest.
Legislation will take care of the rest. So you're saying, oh. Okay. Oh. So basically Hillary Clinton's going to have her, like, universal basic income for the world. Is that what we're talking about? Like a universal income for everyone and then a UBI? What's it called? What does she call it? Her, like, her...
Universal basic income is doomed to fail because as soon as everybody has X amount of money, the cost of everything goes up.
Okay, so that's a separate issue, but Hillary Clinton's always been pushing for this universal income, not the basic income, but universal currency that everyone's on, like the euro. I remember when the euro was launched back in the early 2000s, and most everybody in Europe was like, yeah, okay, that's fine, because we all use the same trains, planes, and automobiles. We all use like the same kind of stuff. We're a more confined area. Our borders are close enough. There's so many people speak so many languages and transact in so many countries. Yeah, okay, we'll go to the euro. I mean, Great Britain was like, nope, we'll stick with the pound. But everyone else is like, yeah, we'll do the euro. And then Hillary Clinton's like, let's do that to the whole world. And I've always been like, I don't know how I feel about that. Like, part of me, ever since I joined the blockchain community, I've been like, you know what, that would kind of be cool in some ways, but in other ways, I feel like it would be disastrous. Especially if certain sole proprietors were the ones in charge of the value and the transactional use case of it, like you guys are indicating. It scares the bejesus out of me, is what I'm saying.
This sounds like a conspiracy, and I've read a couple of books on it. But it's kind of like if we, it's a one world order, and we don't really want a one world order. If you read into that conspiracy of the one world order conspiracy, I kind of have read a lot into it. I'm not saying I believe it per se, but some of it has truth. So the first step to a one world order is one world currency.
Yes. I think like the new world order is what I was referring to. And it does scare me only because, okay, here's why I like it. And I am not an economist. Like, please do not expect important things to come out of my mouth in about 5 seconds. But my very basic scribey interpretation of this is the following. I think it would be really cool for, say, super underprivileged nations under siege of either political duress or civil duress or just anything. I think it would be really cool for people of those nations to be able to access a way to generate an income that is going to apply to where they live that they otherwise could not achieve. So for example, coming onto the Hive blockchain where we're streaming from, somebody from Africa, from Nigeria can get online and make a couple of bucks on a post and have that, you know, feed his family for a week. That's kind of cool. Whereas what makes me nervous is having a global economy. I do sort of feel like transacting can be nice. I mean, it's nice to be able to use the stock exchange in a universal way without having to do all of the exchange rates to apply to the, because you not only have time that passes with an exchange rate, but you also have fees that happen, and then you have loss in, you know, the changing values. But yeah, it's dangerous because there's so many different diplomacies out there, and there's so many different governments out there, and so many different values. I kind of feel like it's just gonna go hairy-carry within like 5 seconds flat. I don't know. But see, that's my very, very basic understanding of the world's economy. So anyone else have any comments, please feel free. So like what would happen is if we had all joined the Euro movement, the Eurozone as Gold Street refers to it, we would have had impact. Like when Greece went bankrupt, that would have affected our dollar. I don't know. Maybe that's just me being selfish. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we should feel more connected. Maybe we should be able to say like, hey, we'll all help you out, Greece. Like, we love you over here. It's like, if we have one economy, then we're going to have one language, and we're going to have one dictator. This just isn't going to work otherwise. Am I wrong? I'm so naive.
You're right. There's also another conspiracy I believe in, is the deep state. I don't know, you probably heard Trump say it a couple times.
Yeah.
I believe in the deep state. It's at work as we speak on everything.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, I think we can agree that there are superpowers that basically decide what we consume. I mean, what's popular, what's not, what sells, what doesn't, what we eat, what we wear. I think we can decide that there are superpowers that kind of decide that because what's advertised to us. Is that kind of what you're referring to at the very least?
Yeah, exactly.
So and at the very least, we can agree that there are superpowers in play. And this is not just 1%, because like 1%, what's that? That's actually like maybe even me, like just because I have a steady income. But this is like super, super elite. And I'm not necessarily opposed to being super, super elite, as long as what you're doing with that elite money and power isn't trying to take away from the money and power of others, but trying to contribute to the money and power and success and freedom of others and the sovereignty. But deep state would be something where we're using these monoliths like the Hive was talking about and taking a new currency and essentially deciding the fate of the rest of the world, all because we now own the ecology of our transaction points. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what to think about it. I get excited because I always am pushing like Amazon needs a crypto and eBay needs a crypto. We all need to be operating on the blockchain, but it scares me as well, because if one person, if it's, it, If it's decentralized, that's fine. It's fine. But this does not sound decentralized to me whatsoever.
No, yeah, it doesn't. And that's what happened with Steam, too. It got uncentralized to where, you know, one person was taking 60% of the pool of the reward pool. Obviously, you know, that's not centralized at all or decentralized. That's very centralized. One guy has full control over how much he's getting on Steam. So that's where that collapsed.
Yes. See, Gold Street makes a great modern day point. Amazon coin would not be decentralized. Here's my fear is that Amazon, eBay, Google. I mean, okay, first of all, why are they going to be any different than what they are today? They're not. Nothing's going to be different. The only difference is they're going to have more power and more control than they already do because they're going to own the world's economy. How exciting does that sound to anyone? Raise your hand if you think that sounds really exciting.
And is it the Amazon guy, Jeff Bezos, like the richest guy in the world right now?
Is he?
Or one, I think, like top two. I think he's either after Bill Gates, or he's before Bill Gates. One of those.
I thought it was Bill Gates, and then Oprah, and then like Bono, and then Mark Zuckerberg. But that's just in my head. I don't know. That's probably
different sources. Like Forbes will say one thing, and then another financial source will say, but it's about the same top five though all the time.
Yeah, they all kind of like rally for the top, and part of it has to do with cash wealth versus asset wealth. I think if it was cash wealth, we'd probably be saying Gates, but I don't know. I think Gold Street, he says he's more richer than Bill Gates now. That could be true. We'll have to check it up. And maybe if someone wants to find the link to that, that'd be cool, like the Forbes link. By the way, you guys, I actually wanted to make a quick little announcement from Ganja Farmer. There is, if any of you have any announcements that you want me to make, I can occasionally make them. Eventually, I'm going to be accepting sponsors. So if you are just tuning in, this is the Crypto Queen podcast. We will be streaming through Vim and reaching out through various other platforms as well. But right now we're just coming from Hive. I'm Little Scribe on Hive. You can find the Crypto Queen podcast there, and you can also download it from any major podcast server or service. And then Ganja Farmer reminded me that one of the things that is really amazing in the Hive community is that you can actually open your own communities. So if you go to PeakD, that's PEAKD.com, you can actually start or join communities in the Hive platform and in the Hive blockchain network. And one of the things that I really love and why I stream from Hive is because of the networks and the communities that I've gained here. So he's doing a, what's your community called, Ganja Farmer? Drop it in the link. Let me just check it. It's Hive Cannabis. Hive Cannabis. There we go. So if you are a producer, grower, distributor, user, or simply appreciator of cannabis products and would like to further the cause and think that it has a benefit naturally to the rest of the human population, or just want to hang out and draw pictures of your favorite plant, then join Hive Cannabis. What's that?
What's your thoughts on marijuana?
You know, I grew up extremely conservative, in a very religious background. So it is interesting because my understanding of the plant was a negative one up until only a few years ago. Now, and I've actually never like done drugs or smoked. I hate to even refer to it as a drug. I think of it as a plant. I think anything in moderation that comes from the earth, it's hard for me to call it a drug, but in any event, I think that there is so much medicinal value to the cannabis plant, whether the bud, the leaf, the hash, I don't really have any preference, but I know enough people to know that it's been super, super beneficial. The CBD, the oil, It's been super beneficial. It's no secret. I mean, we love the plant in its own right. And I always have voted for it to be legalized, both medicinally and recreationally. My only concern with recreational use is there's just not enough research to help support proper use. And so we do have careless users who get into trouble driving because they don't realize the impact that it's having on their driving. And so we're having some problems in that area, politically, socially, economically, and medically. And it's giving kind of a bad rap.
Well, okay, I have some, you know, I come from a similar background as you. I went to a Christian private school my whole life. I'm actually now an agnostic / atheist, I would say now.
Okay.
And I been smoking weed for a while. I usually do smoke and drive because I've been doing it for a long time, so it's like a natural thing to me. I've never been in an accident in my entire life.
And maybe, you know, I don't know the impairment levels, but I do know that some people it affects them differently than others, right, especially depending.
I'd like to hop in on this one. Okay, now in Washington State as well as Oregon State, where it is legal, we already have laws. So if you are impaired, you have a law against that. So we don't need a specific law. However, Washington, when they legalized that, put in a specific provision that said if you had so much cannabis in your system that you were automatically guilty of a
DUI. Yeah, and it's the same thing with alcohol as well. Like, you just have to have a certain level in your system, which I think is good.
Well, now, the problem with that was they instantly criminalized every single medical patient because of the difference. I mean, alcohol burns off within X amount of time. You know, if you are impaired, you know, you're only going to be impaired for this long. However, with cannabis, those levels, especially, you know, people with cancer had elevated cannabinoid levels because they were doing Rick Simpson treatment.
Oh, wait a minute. You're telling me that you don't even have to be driving. It's just if you have that amount in your system that you're like illegal?
Yes, automatically.
Oh, and my gosh.
It was used to harass, bully, and threaten medical marijuana patients. And that's why you got to be careful with this. Now, we've already got our impairment laws, and I fully agree that no matter what kind of drug that you are on, you are definitely very with that. And if you get pulled, impairment, we already have a law. But the same goes with having, you know, any other thing. Just because we can down doesn't mean it's a good idea. Let's just stick with the laws that we got. And yeah, if you are inebriated, you have no place to be on the road, period. It doesn't matter. Cannabis, alcohol, or prescription pills. Dude, sleep.
That's really astounding and disappointing, and bullying. It sounds like it's interesting. You know, because we do already have, as you said, we already have the drunk and impaired driver's laws, and the cannabis DUI. That just makes me mad. But it's funny because a great buzz talks about the many medications that you should not drive if you take. That's true. Like, you can get a DUI for anything. If you have a substance in your system above a certain level, or even if, like, for example, I worked for a criminal attorney, and we had probably 80% of our clients were DUI. And I used to think that DUI attorneys, like, kind of sucked scum. But they don't. In my experience, a lot of the DUIs were bullied into getting a DUI, and like, a lot of them were just getting pulled over for some sort of bleak semblance of a what's the word? Oh my gosh, it's totally failing. What's that? Yeah, infraction. Yeah. And you need to have probable cause. You cannot pull someone over for a DUI unless you have probable cause. Now, that being said, probable cause
is a very wide
yes,
term.
It is a very loosely used term that can refer to maybe up to 1,000 things. That being said, judges are actually understanding of that. The attorneys do a good enough job in court to defend their clients that judges really are trying to be fair about that. In my experience, they're trying to be like, yeah, that you really do need to be a little better about it. Like, you can't just say like, oh, you failed to blink, even though that does count as probable cause. A cop is, if you get pulled over for failure to blink and a cop says, get out and do a DUI test, no. Like, that's not going to fly in court. If you lawyer up, your lawyer is going to be able to get you out of that. Whereas if you don't have an attorney, yeah, you may be in up a creek. But if you have an attorney, they're going to say, yeah, I'm sorry, brother, but you're going to need to do a lot better than that. Problem is, though, that what we have are a lot of clients who are getting off of other addictive substances. For example, heroin. Several of our clients used the methadone product and they use it daily, and not just use it, but they are required to use it by either their parole officer or their medical professional or the courts. Their courts will say, you must use methadone or else we don't want to see you back in here. So they're on these methadone treatments, and they have other drugs as well, like benzos, that help keep them calm so they don't go use. And then they get pulled over and the cops are like, oh, they totally had benzos in their system, so it's a DUI. And now they have a DUI on their record. Even if it gets dismissed, it's on the court record. And it just drives me crazy because it takes 10 years to get that, you know, exonerated, or whatever, not exonerated, but removed from court records. It's ridiculous. So yeah, don't get me started. You just don't want to get me started. But I do get upset, and I do have a very strong feeling. I'm very alt-right when it comes to this kind of stuff. I kind of feel like, stay out of people's business, let them do what they want, as long as they're not harming anyone. And I feel like, Rognut, you had some thoughts on that as well.
Oh, I was actually going to bring this back kind of to the crypto, actually about like court records being on the blockchain and
yeah,
stuff like that. And like, if expungements happen, how can we take expungements off of a blockchain?
Ooh, aren't you a little smarty pants? Oh my gosh. Oh,
because
man.
I've had an expungement. I was actually, back in the day, I don't really care talking about this. I used to be a meth addict for 2 years, and I've actually been clean for 3.5 now.
Oh, congratulations. Amazing you.
And where was I going with that?
Expungements.
Oh, expungements. So I had a DUI, actually, while on meth, and I actually had it expunged because I told the court that I wanted to join the Army, and I showed them all the records of me joining the Army, but I never joined.
That's awesome. Okay, I want to review an expungement, but also, Rogue, I wanted to remind you, you have to pick someone up at 5:30, so don't lose track.
Oh, okay, actually, she just texted me and said that she has a ride home.
Oh, great, so you can stay with us.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I told her I really wanted to do this, so she found a ride.
Oh, good. Well, okay, we're super excited. I am so excited you brought up the expungement issue. I love the subject. For so many reasons. First of all, let's break down what an expungement is, because a lot of people may not know what it is. An expungement, and I've done these for people. So an expungement is when you have a criminal record, meaning an entity can look like, you can get a background check, or an employer, or even just the court, or a parole officer or police or a judge. They go on a court website or the court docket, the records of the court, and they can find and search your name wherever, whichever state you live in or wherever you've been, and they can find that you have a court history. And in that court history, if you were either accused of or tried for or found guilty of, or if you pled to, or had some kind of a ruling that says that you were guilty of something, or even if you were just charged with something and not found guilty and dismissed of, even if you were charged with something, it's going to show up on the court docket. So it is public record, barring certain things that are requested to be sealed. So if you have any kind of public record where you were charged or found guilty of or pled guilty to or no contest to, someone's going to be able to look you up and be like, oh my gosh, Rogue's a total meth head. So what you want to do is within a certain period of time, if you follow your probation or parole or whatever your sentencing was, if you had one, or, you know, whatever the court gave the person, they're going to say, okay, you're going to be dismissed as long as you follow the certain criteria. After a certain period of time, whether it's 12 or 18 months, you get the dismissal if you follow your parole officer's guidelines or whatever it is. It's different for each state. In Utah, you follow whatever you do and you can get it dismissed. However, it is still on record. So, hey, we'll see you. We'll see you later, Gold Street. Thanks for coming by. So you can get that, you can actually get that entire event removed from the court records as long as it's not a certain type of felony. There are certain types of felonies that do not qualify for expungement because they're dangerous or what have you. But if you were just using a drug, you can get that removed from the court record so that when you get applying for a job or try applying for the military, it don't show up. So you're good and free and clear. And each type of charge and or conviction or pleading has certain time, like a statute of time limitation, maximums on them so that you have to meet a certain criteria before it can be expunged. Some are 2, some are 5, some are 10. DUIs are 10 in Utah. But essentially, you get it removed from the court directory as well as every other directory or database that might, like the police or the prison. And so expungements are really great. They come in handy for people who really do want to have a clean start and they just want to have everyone, they want to be taken seriously, they want to get a better job, and it's just great. I'm all for them as long as you aren't just a total idiot and just like committing crimes all over the place and then you're like, can we just wipe my slate like it never happened? But anyway, yeah, so this is a good question because when it comes to blockchain and an immutable ledger that says that I was a total meth dealer, like I was giving meth to babies, like, how do we expunge that from the blockchain? Good question. And do we and can we and then what? I don't even know what to do. I don't even know what to say.
So someone would have to build a system on the blockchain that would be able to like allow, I don't know, like a witness vote kind of thing to where people, the judges...
Well, it would have to be... No, it would have to be a hard fork, sweetheart, because the only... Because the reason that... The reason, yes, it would have to be a hard fork. And you can't just like hard fork everything. Like you know what? It would have to be a hard fork. I don't know any other way. Like the entire system would have to come to a consensus that says that we're going to eliminate this particular event. That being said, that particular event is going to be, you know what? Here's the thing. That event is going to be attached to whatever events surrounded it. So assuming that transactions like court transactions, for instance, all took place on the blockchain and you had a preliminary hearing and then you had a sentencing hearing, those hearings are going to have transcriptions, they're going to have video, they're going to have audio, they're going to have court reporters, they're going to have certain judges, they're going to have attorneys, like... Assuming everything was on the blockchain, all that other stuff would be on the blockchain as well, which means that if you got that expunged from the blockchain and you had a hard fork from that, then every event surrounding that would need to be hard forked. So here's my suggestion. Here's my suggestion is that everything that qualifies as mutable, something that we could theoretically want to expunge later or remove later, like if you were a system in place that decided those things, you would need to have some kind of a ledger that worked on top of it. Sort of like how Splinterlands works on top of the blockchain. They're not the blockchain, but they have an API that works on top of it. So maybe something like that, but then you'd still need to have a court order that removed it. I think that could work, where it's an app. It's like an app. The court system would be an app to the blockchain.
Right, I agree. Okay. Yeah, that's the only way that would honestly work, yeah.
Also, why do we keep saying happy 420? We're like May, what is this? May 17th today is what we are.
Well, it's 5:20 for me, so I've already passed
420. Oh my gosh.
Because he's on the West Coast, so he's an hour behind.
Hey, Ganja, or Judge Ganja, that picture of Bud that you have up above, that's not yours, is it? Did you just, like the picture? Or is that actual your farm? Do you farm? I want to hear what he has to say about that. We'll give him a minute. Frankie, I don't think I said hi. Thanks for joining us. And everybody, thanks for hanging out. This is Crypto Queen. It is 5:20 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. I think we'll give this another 10 official minutes. If we go over, that's fine too. But I wanted to move on to my last little tidbit here. Let me go hunt it down. Oh, yes. It was Overstock. Remember we were going to talk about Overstock? Here's what's interesting. Is Overstock is cool in one way. Like, they're using a crypto. They have their own cryptocurrency. They pulled it off. It's called T0. Let me stream the page. Okay. I don't know if that's showing up for you guys. I don't know what I'm doing right, but Overstock has a cryptocurrency referred to as T0, and they are seeking regulatory approval to trade the securities and stocks on their Bitcoin exchange app. So where this is interesting is that T0 is actually backed by cash. So they've been investigated, regulated, and approved by the SEC because they are basically, they have a cash standard. They have a fiat standard. So every piece of token that their users trade with, it has a Fort Knox behind it. So they're a little bit different in that a lot of cryptocurrencies don't have the actual backing, which is why they're considered a security, and a security is a tradable commodity, I guess. Well, securities and commodities are a little bit different, but they are able to exchange on a trading platform. I want to talk a little more about it, but I have a little interruption to fix. Can you, Rogue, do you guys want to like have a little chat without me for 1 second? I gotta go fix something at my door.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Anybody got anything else to add to like how legal stuff can be put on the blockchain?
Transcribed onto a ledger, or that ledger would not actually get input to a blockchain until the time as a result was established.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And so then how to take it off if it ever gets expunged for you shooting that for person?
That's a harder one to answer. One idea might be that not every blockchain is open for everybody to read, whereas in cases of, I'm not sure what case to say, but shooting somebody is different to marijuana possession.
Right, I understand.
but maybe one chain is closed and only open to law enforcement agencies, that only they can read that chain. So the average person on the street would not be able to go in and check on certain activities.
Right. Okay. I'm back, you guys. Sorry.
It's just hidden.
Yeah, but it's still there. So
yeah, it's still there. Yeah.
Like if you went back into court, the courts would be able to access your previous information. Now they would have to know also to access that particular chain to do a search.
I was just asking them what they, which is kind of more on the legal stuff in the blockchain, and he was just bringing up a point that you would have a separate blockchain that pretty much that only the police and officials can read, but not the average human, and that would just hide it from everybody instead of totally deleting it.
Yeah, I think that was kind of something I thought of as well, although if it were to model after the current system, then it would need to be public. The difference would be that it would be a separate blockchain in that it could be hard forked. So whenever you have some kind of a change that needed to be done or undone, then you could just hard fork it. But it would be a separate blockchain. I think that works. That's good. That works for me. Okay, so I'm reading this securities issue with Overstock, and I'm not sure I really understand what they're trying to do, because it says they're seeking approval to trade blockchain-based securities and traditional stocks in its Bitcoin exchange app, T0 Crypto. And so it's interesting that they're looking for approval. I think this is good, because when we have companies as large as Overstock who are kind of playing by the rules and trying to get SEC approval, regulatory approval to do each thing that they decide to do, and then they get said approval, as much as they're not the same, they're an apple compared to an orange when you're looking at trading like Bitcoin or Hive. The fact of the matter is, I do feel like it's laying some really important groundwork that gives way to future confidence in cryptocurrency exchanges. Granted, we're all a little bit nervous about these huge conglomerates coming together and changing the face of the economy in a way that benefits them solely, or at least largely. But as a whole, if we're trying to further the blockchain atmosphere, then Overstock is doing a pretty good job. I think they're making a good name for the fact that we can start looking at cryptocurrencies. Really, what they're doing is it's a digital security trading platform, and it's an alternative trading system. By the way, you guys know ATS David, ATS. I do sort of wonder if ATS stands for alternative trading system. That's just kind of my guess. I don't know if you guys have ever thought of that. So with Overstock, I think this is very promising, and I think that the digital security shareholder dividend, which is it was a plan that was designed by recently retired or resigned CEO Patrick Byrne, and he was trying to just get people to invest more. So instead of saying, hey, would you guys invest in our stock? What he did is he designed this new cool thing. And he said, hey, this is actually tradable as a cryptocurrency. Why don't we give it a try? Let's see how it does. It has a different volatility, has a different market tradable abilities. There's things, different things you can do with it. It's a different utility. Let's just build this out. And it seems to be doing really, really well for an initial token, initial launch. And it has prompted broker dealers. And let's see, it says prompted new broker dealers to approach blah, 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 blah. And it's giving them more digital securities to trade. So it's basically kind of giving them more assets to trade. Even though it's weird, because I don't really understand how that works when they're the ones that are backing it. But I think what happens is that it increases the value of those things. And so it creates sort of an interest token on it. It's kind of like a smart media token a little bit. So that one I thought was a good one to look at. If you guys want to go check it out, let me drop the link. There we go. Okay, so we're coming up on the 5:30 mark, and I do feel like this is a wonderful place to stop. I feel like we've kind of covered the gamut. There's so many questions I do have, though, about how cryptocurrency and blockchain would affect the world if it were to be taken over by the blockchain, or rather if we allowed the blockchain to be our primary operating system, like the basically the new internet. I think it is. It's going to be the next internet. Do we want it to come in slowly and for everyone else to have their own trading tokens, or do we want huge monoliths to push it forward because that's the only way to further the cause? I think there's some pros and cons, lots of great stuff to talk about. I do really appreciate everybody's thoughts, and I think it's awesome. Y'all contributed immensely to the convo. Thanks everyone for coming. Thanks Rogue Nut for being my little sidekick today.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I went off track a bit.
No way, we love it.
Some of the stuff into like the legal system, that's why I was trying to ask that, because that's, you know, real world stuff.
That was exactly perfect for the show. I really did want to look at stuff like that. And I feel like I could have probably done an even more exhaustive job. But for limited time, I think it's better to just call it right now. And maybe we'll have like I'm sure we'll have another show with that topic at hand. Maybe have a little more. But
every Sunday, correct?
Yep.
All right. I'll be here next.
All right, we'll see you guys around. Hopefully you'll be around next week. I'm sticking with the 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon time because I want to catch all my European friends. I appreciate y'all being here, and thanks again. We'll come around next time. Make sure you go hit up Rogue Nut on Vim. Give him some points. If you want to hear any of these shows, go to Crypto Queen on your podcast service. You can also check me out on Hive at Little Scribe. Thanks for coming, guys.